Our presentation today is Dwelling in Your Grit, It's a Good Place to Be by Mary Sue Roydebook.
Good morning again. I am Mary Sue Roydebook. My pronouns are she, her. As I move through my life as a mother, spouse, minister, and educator, I often find myself holding space for both the need to persevere and tenderness, for the fierce commitment to justice and truth, and the deep human need for grace and rest, for the gift of supporting others, while also honoring my need to gently protect my emotional energy, for the desire to do it on my own, and the need to allow others to walk beside me. That balance is at the heart of what I'm talking about this morning, grit. It is where I aim to live, to dwell, to embrace, and I don't do it alone. Grit is a word we hear a lot these days, especially in conversations surrounding success, determination, and perseverance. But today I invite you to look at grit not just as rugged persistence, but as inner fortitude, the kind that arises not from brute willpower alone, but from a deep sense of purpose, passion, interconnectedness, and emotional alignment. During the thick of COVID, I started scheduling weekly Zoom chats with my dad. While I missed sitting across from him, sharing a bowl of chili and conversation, there was an unexpected intimacy in these digital gatherings. His face appeared so close on my screen, every expression, every emotion clearly visible. I even had to work with him on setting up the phone stand I'd given him correctly. I said to him with gentle, daughterly humor, "Dad, I love seeing your face, but perhaps not quite so much of your nose hairs." We finally got that sorted. In one of our weekly conversations, I sought his wisdom on the subject of grit. This wasn't idle curiosity. As an educator and minister, I'd been researching resilience in children and families, concerned about how our fast and easy culture might be affecting our children's capacity for struggle and growth. I worry about this, and I knew my father did too. In a world of instant downloads and same-day delivery, how do we nurture the muscle that allows us to sit with discomfort? How do we help children understand that difficulty isn't failure, but rather the fertile ground where true learning happens? When process is no longer valued at a societal level, how do we help families embrace the good work of showing up day after day, even when progress is slow? I'd been reading Angela Duckworth's research on grit and was intrigued to see how grit was a better predictor of lifelong skills than intelligence and talent, and I wanted my father's wisdom too. During our conversation, I asked him, "Who comes to mind when you think about a gritty person?" "Your grandma," he said without hesitation. I smiled because she often came to my mind too. My father continued, "She came to this country at age 12, all by herself on a ship from Belgium. She had a sixth grade education, lived through two world wars, had to bury two children and two husbands long before their time. And in spite of it all, she saw purpose and joy in her life. She knew her life mattered." We sat with the weight of that truth for a few sacred moments. It was so true. My grandmother's inner beliefs were evident throughout her life. She seemed to have found that part of herself that kept going, not just because she had to, but because she was called to. I think she knew deep in her bones that people walked beside her and she did the same. This mutuality of life was her story, not a pursuit of happiness through fleeting moments, but rather embracing the profound truth that life is messy and walking gracefully with this wholeness, even through pain, was the choice she made. The ancient wisdom of the proverb, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together, speaks directly to the grit message today. The myth of the lone achiever has done tremendous damage throughout the lives of many. Different from these familiar platitudes, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, I am speaking of a grit that is not centered on just our individual determination. No, I have found the ability to remain gritty in difficult circumstances greatly depends on communal relationships, culture, passion, and community support. One of my grit heroes is Ibtihaj Muhammad. It amazed me how she broke barriers as the first Muslim American woman to wear a hijab while competing for the U.S. in the Olympics. Despite facing discrimination, limited access to training facilities, and being told she didn't belong in fencing because of her hijab, she persevered through years of dedicated practice. In 2016, she made history by winning an Olympic bronze medal, demonstrating how grit can overcome both practical obstacles and deeply entrenched societal barriers. It seemed to me it was her passion for her faith, her culture, her sport, and her family that fueled her grit fire. Emily Dickinson exemplified remarkable grit, living in almost complete isolation while creating some of America's most profound poetry. Despite publishing fewer than a dozen poems during her lifetime and facing rejection from the literary establishment, she persisted in writing nearly 1,800 poems. Rather than surrendering to despair and her lack of recognition, she transformed her solitude into extraordinary artistic vision, crafting lines like, "Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul." Words that continue to inspire more than 150 years later. Her passion was not only literary, but she knew her voice mattered, not only for the message it carried, but for other women as well. She found companions on her grit journey. A few weeks ago, I shared a meal with Prairie's Caring Committee, and I was in awe and inspired by what I heard and witnessed when looking into the eyes of those lovely individuals sitting before me. As most of you know, this group divides up our Prairie membership, and each person on the committee has a group they are available to. They are their person. They are entering the grit with each person who needs them. It is a passion for service and care. They cannot take the first steps. This is up to the person they are assisting. But they are beside them. They are beside us. Last year, I spoke to a group of middle schoolers about the difference between talent and grit and the power of passion. I used a couple impressive lives as examples. Thomas Edison was my first. It was his passion and failure that fueled his grit. He endured thousands of failures before inventing a working light bulb, famously remarking, and I love this one, "I have not failed. I've just found 10,000 ways that won't work." His perseverance through countless setbacks ultimately changed human civilization forever. The evidence is clear. Talent creates opportunity, but grit determines what you do with that opportunity. Next, we looked at the extraordinary story of Yusra Mardini, the Syrian refugee who became an Olympic swimmer. When fleeing Syria in 2015, the motor on their overcrowded refugee boat failed in the sea, and she and her sister and two others jumped into the freezing water and swam for 3 hours, pushing the boat to safety and saving the lives of 20 other refugees. Despite this trauma, Mardini's passion for swimming remained undiminished. Just 1 year later, she competed at the 2016 Rio Olympics as part of the first ever refugee Olympic team. But what truly exemplifies grit to me is that her passion extended beyond personal achievement. She swam to represent the 80 million displaced people worldwide. She said, "I want to represent all the refugees because I want to show everyone that after the pain, after the storm, comes calm days." Her passion sustained her not just because of love for swimming, but because it became a platform for something greater than herself. Mary Oliver, that keen observer of the natural world and human heart, wrote in her poem, "The Uses of Sorrow," "Someone I loved once gave me a box full of darkness. It took me years to understand that this, too, was a gift." That box full of darkness represents for me difficult experiences I would never choose, yet within them lie seeds of transformation. For years, Tim and I had walked the same heartbreaking pregnancy path over and over. Each time hope bloomed, only to wither away at the same cruel checkpoint of development. After our last loss, we'd finally made peace with a different route to parenthood. Adoption papers spread across our kitchen table, a new kind of hope taking shape. Then came the call from my friend, a nurse, and someone who knew my heart. "Just one more doctor, come on," she pleaded. "This clinical trial sounds hopeful." I agreed, and I think at the time it felt more for her and Tim than for myself. In my mind, but not in my heart, I was packed up and moving on. The specialist's office was like countless others we'd visited. The same sterile smell, the same uncomfortable chairs, the same weight of dread settling in my stomach. When he walked in, chart in hand, I braced myself for the clinical detachment I'd grown accustomed to, the medical terminology that distanced us from the raw reality of what these losses really meant. At first, I thought the doctor had seasonal allergies or was ill. His eyes were red-rimmed as he studied my history. But when he looked up, I saw tears tracking down his cheeks. Here I saw and felt a genuine grief of someone who understood the depth of what we'd endured. It was personal. He was seeing me, really seeing me. "I am so sorry," he said, "for all your pain and loss." At that moment, something shifted. This wasn't just our burden, and this doctor really cared. The grit required to keep going, the courage needed to risk hope again, it wasn't just ours alone to summon. This doctor, this stranger, carried some of it too. Our family and friends, and all the other women in the trial who understood precisely what these losses meant. Yes. Saying yes again would invite the possibility of more pain, more midnight fears, more anxious heartbeats counted during ultrasounds. But there was also a possibility. And most importantly, I was allowing others to share in my grit. My journey ultimately led to our beautiful son, Jeremy. While I would never have chosen such loss prior to his birth, I must confess that those previous heartbreaks profoundly deepened my gratitude for his precious life. There is a word one of my theology professors, who is from South Africa, used in explaining interconnectedness, Ubuntu. She taught me that this ancient word speaks of humanity. I am because we are. My interpretation of this is my grit is bound up in yours. Your perseverance strengthens mine. When you stand tall in your moment of strength, you become grit for me in my weakness. When I find my footing after stumbling, I become grit for you. This is precisely why our interconnectedness matters. We are not isolated beings experiencing separate struggles. We are a living tapestry of shared grit. I think of beach glass, tumbled smooth by sand and waves. Each piece was once sharp, broken, perhaps even dangerous. But through constant contact with the grit around it, the abrasion of sand, the pressure of water, the friction of other glass pieces, it transforms into something beautiful with edges that no longer cut. We do this for each other, serving as the loving friction that helps smooth each other's jagged edges. As we look at the hard things we do and dwell in our grit, may we be aware of our interconnectedness. I invite you to take a moment to be mindful of the solid, supportive earth, the foundation that holds us to even when we are unaware of its presence. Much like that ground, there exists within each of us a foundation of resilience, what I've come to call our capacity to dwell in grit. As I have done in the past, I leave you with a Carrie Newcomer song, a bit of wisdom for the grit journey. Yes, we can do hard things. We can dwell in our grit because we have companions for the journey.